Okay, so thank you everyone for coming, and it's my first APHA conference, so I'm pretty excited to be here. So we heard from Paige and Yvonne about sort of increasing soda consumption trends in the U.S. and the effect that has on health. And so one of the questions that comes up becomes not only what effective policies we can adopt to reduce soda consumption, but also how to get public support for these policies. And I have no disclosures. And I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Sarah Gollist, as Dan said, who's been the main supervisor on this project, Colleen Berry at Johns Hopkins, and Jeff Niederdepp at Cornell, who are investigators on this project as well. And we're being funded by a Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Healthy Eating Research Program grant. Sorry about that. Okay. Is that better? Okay. So for the background, we sort of know all this. Obesity in the U.S. is rising very rapidly. Sodas have been identified as one of the greatest contributors to obesity in the U.S. And so one of the policies that has been proposed by public health officials and researchers in the past couple of years has been a penny per ounce excise tax on SSBs. And this sort of policy has two main benefits. One is to decrease soda consumption by 8 to 12%, and the second one is to generate revenue, not insignificant revenue for local and national governments. So given these benefits, policymakers in a number of jurisdictions have been proposing excise taxes on SSBs. During the past two legislative cycles, taxes have been proposed in 19 states and 3 cities in the U.S. But out of all these proposals, only one has passed, and that was in Tennessee, where they extended a very small tax on soda bottlers and manufacturers through 2016. And Washington State actually was able to pass an excise tax on SSBs, along with cigarettes and alcohol and so on, in 2010. But this was repealed just 1 year later by a popular referendum that was very much backed by the beverage industry. And so we're interested in why there hasn't been more success in getting SSB taxes implemented in different states and cities. And this is particularly relevant because this year in California, two cities have put SSB taxes on the electoral ballot next week. And these are Richmond, which is just across the bay in Contra Costa County, and El Monte down in Los Angeles County. And so the proposals in these cities are very similar. They're both split into two. Measure N in Richmond and Measure H in El Monte are both asking voters whether or not a tax should be passed. And Measure O in Richmond and Measure C in El Monte recommend that these funds be used for obesity programs, community health programs. And the reason for this is that in California, you'd need a two-thirds vote to pass the tax with directed funds. So they opted for a general tax, which only needs a 50% majority. And the success of these measures really depends on public opinion and support, because unlike previous proposals, like the ones in Philadelphia or New York, these are going to be elected or voted on by the general public as opposed to being top-down initiatives. So gathering public support for these is really important. And so these are sort of some of the questions and aims that we have for our research. First is, which pro-tax messages do advocates use most often? How are these messages derived? So how do they come up with these messages? And which they perceive to be the most effective? A second is, which anti-tax messages were the most frequently encountered, and which of those were perceived to be most effective? And then we were also interested in sort of stakeholders' thoughts on the future of SSB taxes as a policy tool in reducing obesity in the U.S. So we did a media content analysis. We searched for articles about sugar-sweetened beverages and taxes from local papers in jurisdictions that considered an SSB tax during 2009 through 2011. We analyzed and coded these articles and identified pro and anti-tax stakeholders, and then we asked pro-tax stakeholders if they were willing to participate in a brief interview. And then after interviewing those stakeholders, we asked them to identify other interviewees that we might be able to talk to. And so we ended up with a mix of local and national stakeholders and advocates and policymakers who had either considered an SSB tax in the past or are considering them now. And just to give a brief overview of the interviews that we've had so far, we've had 11, 7 were from California, 4 were from other jurisdictions. We've had 3 policymakers or elected official and 8 public health advocates or local health officials. And 3 of our interviewees so far have been from either Richmond or El Monte. And so these were the questions and themes that were on our interview protocol. They pretty much mirror the research questions and aims that we had earlier. And the interviews were recorded and they were coded and analyzed in Vivo 10. So here's just a graphic depiction of the results from our pro-tax message question. And as you can see, sugar is a really big theme here, calories, sort of consumption, we see obesity. We also see kids and people and health. So the general idea is that the pro-tax messages are very much sort of health-focused and people-focused. And in order of frequency, these were the top 3 messages that we got from our interviewees. First is that SSBs are a major contributor to obesity and related health conditions. And this was especially effective if these effects were related to children. So if people talked about kids in the community being, you know, very big consumers of soda and the types of health effects that they're going to experience later in life, that was a very effective way to get people to support the tax. And the second message is that the revenue generated by an SSB tax can be used to fund community health programs. And this actually has the power to change some people's opinions. So if people were suspicious of government in general, or if they were sort of anti-tax in general, if you tell them that these funds specifically will be directed toward the community and directed toward health and wellness programs, people often change their minds and decide to support the tax. And the third is just the amount of sugar and or calories in SSBs. We've had interviewees carrying around, big jugs or big jars of sugar just to show people how much sugar they're consuming from their drinks. And some of the other messages that came up were that SSBs have certain unique characteristics that make it a fair target for taxation. These include, the liquid calories argument, where you're not as satiated if your calories are in liquid form, and the fact that you don't really need sodas, you don't need to spend the money on buying sodas at all, you have other alternatives. Taxation will lead to reduced SSB consumption. This is the sort of mechanism behind the tax, the price elasticity of demand. We have industry marketing affects the food and beverage choices we make. So if people say, your food and beverage choices are your responsibility, you're responsible for your own health, you can say that actually the environment and the marketing from the industry actually plays a big role in the choices that you make. And another one is promoting alternative beverages such as water, low-fat milk, 100% fruit juices, and et cetera. And this one is interesting because it addresses one of the very frequent and very powerful anti-tax messages, which is that SSB taxes are regressive, or they disproportionately target or affect the poor. And one of our interviewees was talking about this, and his quote was that an SSB tax may be regressive, but SSBs are even more regressive because SSBs disproportionately affect low-income communities. They experience health disparities because of sugar-sweetened beverage consumption, and that's the real regressive tax, is a tax on our health. And so these were some of the anti-tax messages that came up, and again, you can see taxes themselves were a really big theme. You see regressive, you see government, business, you see nanny. And so it's not very surprising that the top anti-tax message is that government is acting as sort of a nanny state that's telling us what to eat and drink, and it's restricting our personal choice. And the second one is that taxes will have a negative economic impact on businesses and workers. So stores who sell SSBs, people who work in the industry, they would be negatively affected by this type of tax. And the third is that SSBs are being unfairly targeted. Other foods and beverages are just as unhealthy. So if we want to tax sodas and SSBs, why not tax candy? Why not tax, French fries? Some more anti-tax messages. There's the regressive argument, which I mentioned earlier. There's the positive influence of the beverage industry, which is interesting because especially from our interviewees in Seattle and Washington, where Coca-Cola has become a sponsor of the Seattle Center, they're saying that the industry is doing all it can to sort of insinuate itself into the fabric of civic society. So it's trying to project a positive image. It's trying to sponsor local community centers and schools and so on, so that people will be less inclined to do anything that is harmful to the industry. And then we have just taxes in general are a bad idea. You have anti-tax sentiments in general. And finally, we have SSB consumption is not responsible for obesity. You know, they question the science and link between sugar-sweetened beverages and obesity. We have people should take responsibility for their own actions, and then we have the slippery slope argument where people are afraid that government will move on to tax everything else if they are able to tax sodas. And some of our results about message characteristics and policy learning, we found that the stakeholders get their messages from a number of different sources. They talk with other stakeholders and advocates. They look at scientific journals. They go to research institutions like CSPI or the RUD Center. They look at campaigns from predecessors. So a lot of the New York campaigns have been used by a lot of the other states and cities. A few do focus group testing or polling. That's a little bit restricted due to limited financial resources. And a lot of them get just feedback from the general public. Some of them target or tailor to different audiences by role, so policymakers versus community leaders, or parents versus teenagers, and so on, and by demographics such as race and ethnicity, age, and so on. And they disseminate these messages using a number of different venues. They use media. They work with local community leaders, and some have hired public relations professionals, and some work with media consultants like the Berkeley Media Studies Group. And for future strategies, there are two main themes. First was educational or ground softening efforts, where they continue to get the word out about SSBs and their health effects, and trying to increase support either for an SSB tax or just to get people to be more aware of the choices they're making. And second is just pursuing other interventions for reducing consumption. So we have promoting alternative beverages, we have vending policies, school-based policies, procurement policies, and so on. And key is that these are not mutually exclusive aims. They sort of combine with the overarching aim of trying to change societal norms, getting people to be aware that SSBs are not good for you and making it easier for them to make healthier choices. And so some of the themes that came up were, one was the effectiveness of pro-tax messages. So the particularly effective pro-tax messages were those that either use visual representations, so I mentioned the sort of gallons or jugs of sugar, comparing calories in sugar-sweetened beverages to other forms of junk food. So if you say, your big gulp is equivalent to eating 12 donuts, people are more sort of aware of what that means for them. And another one is using sort of emotional appeals, so getting the public angry at the beverage industry. And this was taken from the anti-tobacco campaigns of a couple of decades ago. And really revealing industry tactics and getting the public angry about the lengths that the industry will go to in order to sell their products. And a second theme is potential conflicts in the messages, and this can come in several different forms. Tailoring by demographic may have, it has potential for backlash, and this is in two different ways. So first is just in general. We've had interviews tell us that when they speak to a community and they really give them statistics about obesity and soda consumption relevant to that particular community, people actually resent it in some ways. So people are saying, don't come into our community and tell us that we're fat, don't tell us what to do. Who are you? You're the outsider coming in to tell us, this is what you people should do. And people don't take kindly to that. And a second one is just trying to address the tensions or any potential tensions between different disadvantaged groups that may be competing for public health resources. So I mentioned that one of the very effective pro-tax messages was using revenue from the taxes to promote community programs. Well, different demographics or different interests, different communities within these cities, they want that money to go to activities and programs that will benefit their community. And so there's a challenge in trying to balance these demands and trying to message to different groups, but still being truthful and being straightforward with them. And a third is emphasizing the mechanism of the tax versus the implication of the tax. And this is just that the aim of the tax is to reduce consumption, but another benefit from it is to increase revenue, but you can't get as much revenue if the consumption decreases. So there's an inherent sort of conflict in that. Another point is the challenge of SSB tax messaging, and a big point in here is that beverage industry resources far exceed the resources of the public health community. So for instance, in Richmond, the beverage industry has spent over $2 million versus a couple of tens of thousands of dollars by Fit for Life, which is a community health advocacy organization in Richmond. And down in El Monte, I think the LA Times just reported that there's been, I think, $1.3 million spent there and maybe $57,000 spent by the public health, the pro-tax advocates. So there is a real sort of asymmetry or imbalance in types of resources available to the two sides. And then a fourth thing that came up was the role of the messenger and the reputation of public health, which is, I think, relevant to everyone here probably. And there were disagreements between interviewees on this point. Some say that public health has more credibility than the beverage industry, and so their messages are more likely to be believed by the general public, while some think that public health has this type of arrogance or a type of attitude where, you know, someone says, I'm just the public health guy, here's what the problem is, and here's what to do about it, and it really pushes people's autonomy buttons. So that's also something to watch out for. And some of the limitations of the study, we have a small N, we only have 11 interviews so far, though we hope to get more. Most of our interviewees are from the health community, and we've only included pro-tax our stakeholders in our interview so far. And next steps are conducting more interviews, hopefully over the next month or two. We'd like to examine if there are any patterns or differences by role, so advocate versus policymaker, and by region, so California versus non-California. And then we are going to be systematically testing these messages, either alone or in a combination, for their effects on public opinion. So that's all. Thank you. And if you have any questions, if you have any questions or if you'd like to do an interview with us, feel free to contact me.